The League of Legends betting podcast is brought to you by my patrons at patreon.com/gelatilol. There you can find bonus content like in-depth articles on macro trend analysis and league previews, as well as thoughts on breaking news and the podcast picks before the show is released to platforms. You also get to support your creators more directly. patreon.com/gelatilol. That's G-E-L-A-T-I-L-O-L. Good morning, or good day, or good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you are listening to this. It's currently about 5:45 a.m. Eastern on Friday, March 29th, 2024. This is going to be the LCK playoff preview for this weekend. We have Saturday and Sunday matches in the LCK this weekend. Our first two playoff matches for spring 2024. Just a little bit of housekeeping first. We have a bit of an interesting slate, and because a lot of my listeners are DFS players, I'm going to try to release the podcast and the Patreon posts kind of in the same format to the best of my abilities as the DraftKings slates are. So they're doing the LCK Saturday and Sunday as a slate. I believe they're going to do the LEC Saturday and Sunday as a slate, and then LCS is probably going to be like two single slates. And after that, the LPL starts up on Sunday. So what we're going to be doing here is I'm going to do separate posts for the LCK, LEC, and LCS. And I will be doing separate podcasts in much the same vein. So this is the LCK preview for Saturday and Sunday. They are the two playoff matches for this weekend. And we'll have separate shows for the other slates. All right, getting right into it here. We have the day one and two of the LCK Spring 2024 playoffs. This is the first round of the playoffs. The LCK does a slightly different format. All the regions do ever so slightly different formats here. So the LCK will have the top two seeds having byes, and then the 3-6 play with the three choosing the opponent, and then the other matchup gets that. If you want to take a quick look at the Patreon, I did just some bigger picture macro thoughts on heading into playoffs, like conceptually what happens during playoffs. I'll touch on that in a minute. I also posted the post-regular season power ratings as we get ready to head into the playoffs for both models that I'm using. I also posted the power ratings for what I call the filtered model, and you're going to hear me reference this in both the LPL and LCK specifically, because there's a pretty large divergence between the haves and the have-nots in those leagues. So what I like to do when it comes to playoff time is to sample, like filter out all the good teams versus bad teams matchups. And I just look at the playoff teams against other playoff teams. And in some cases, I will filter out other playoff teams if I really don't think there's, you know, much to be said about those teams. I mostly do this for the LCK and the LPL because the bottoms of those leagues tend to be a lot worse. I usually don't do it for the LCS and the LCK or LEC unless I have to. If there's like an exceptionally bad team that's warping samples, then I'll take it out, but I usually don't. It gives you a bit of a clearer picture about how these teams are performing against other good teams, because there's a lot of times where you'll get teams that have a better statistical performance, or their numbers are getting pumped up because they kind of just beat on some bad teams. It's the classic thing you see in real sports where, you know, you have a team that dominates a division and they have these crazy points per game, but you look at the three teams in their division, which is like, you know, a third of their schedule or whatever, and they're all bad defenses or something like that. So it kind of shaves out some of that noise. You know, nothing's going to be perfect, but gives you a bit of a clearer picture for how they're doing against good teams. It also turns you on to certain things like we saw with Weibo last year. You know, one of the reasons I liked Weibo going into the World Championships last year was that they had a significantly better performance against good teams, and they played down to the bad teams. Kind of like, I'm trying to think of a real sports meme for this, but like, I guess like the Steelers for many years, the Pittsburgh Steelers in the NFL did this, where they would have these like crazy games where they'd beat some of the best teams in the league, and then like the next week they turn around and lose to like the one win team. You know, they just had a tendency to do that for like most of Mike Tomlin's regime. So I just found that kind of funny. But anyway, sometimes you can spot diamonds in the rough like that, where you look at Weibo, like Weibo were like the number two team in the LPL if you just looked at their sample against the good teams. And sure enough, that team ended up going to World Finals. There was a lot more involved in that. It wasn't just because of that, but, you know, it still kind of gave you a bit of a clue there. Maybe that there's more to look into. Something I looked at when I sampled out the good teams and bad teams in the LCK for this. Fear X actually graded as the number 4 team and a clear cut above the other 6 teams, which was impressive. And this is looking at the full season with a little bit of extra weight on more recent performance. Now, I'll admit Fear X looked a lot better at the end of the season, but maybe something to look forward to heading into summer. You know, they weren't like an elite team, but you know, they actually did better against the good teams than some playoff teams that we're going to be seeing here momentarily. So just thought I'd point that out, something to monitor moving into summer, and I'll probably touch on that again before we get into the summer LCK. Anyway, all of that and all the visuals for this can be found on the Patreon. We're going to get into the matches here, but one other thing I wanted to mention before we actually touch on these matches here is that in general, in the LCK, there tends to be an uptick in kills per minute, average game time, average towers, average dragons, average barons, etc. in the playoffs. And, you know, when you think about it, that makes a whole lot of sense because the games tend to be a little bit more contested, a little bit more competitive. Not always, but more often than they are otherwise. So it makes a whole lot of sense that you'd get an uptick in all of those categories. The reason I'm mentioning this is because a lot of times in, you know, series where there's not necessarily like a side that you like or a huge edge on any one thing or the other, one of the best things you can do is determine, you know, where you should be operating from in terms of breaking ties or starting at a position, right? I like a lot of the neutral overs and kill total overs in these contests, and I think you should kind of operate, in the LCK at least, in the last few years, you should operate under the assumption that you should be proving the case against taking, you know, prove the case against taking an over rather than for taking an under, right? In other words, like kind of break the tie based on the macro trend and the headwinds that are working in your favor. I'm going to mention that a couple other times during this show, but I just figured I'd give you a preview into understanding like what I'm referencing when I say that. One other note, I am kind of glad these are the 6 teams that we got in playoffs, although, you know, hindsight, seeing these Fear X numbers is kind of interesting, but I do think the 6 best teams made the playoffs, which is a good thing for the LCK. All right, first matchup we have Saturday morning. We have Hama Life Esports, and I'm just a disclaimer, I'm reading the odds for this from the Patreon post, but these have fluctuated quite a bit because I've released this over the past couple of days. They should be close enough. The second match didn't really move all that much. The first match has inflated a little bit, but it's not a huge deal. Hama Life Esports, -1431 on the money line. The -1.5 maps is at -415, and the -2.5 maps, the sweep, is at -107. Against the Guangdong Freaks, who are +845 on the money line, the +1.5 is at +313. The +2.5, which is Guangdong to take at least a game, is at -113. Guangdong -1.5 is +1600, and Guangdong to sweep is at a whopping +3642, more than 36-1. I'll do map total overs. Over 3.5 maps is over -110, under -114. It's almost 4-1 for the over 4.5 maps, so if you think this is going to go to a fifth game. I'll touch on this in a second. Map total bets are not something I play very often because 99% of the time the underdog spread is a bigger edge on market price. The only reason you should ever really be playing map spreads is if there's a certain like map spread that's not offered at the book you're playing at, or if you're just trying to get more money down than you can get on the spread, in which case you probably don't need to be listening to my advice. Anyway, Hama Life are a perfect 14-0 as favorites outright. They are 10-4 against the map spread as favorites, 19-13 against the kill spread. Guangdong, 3-7 outright as underdogs, 4-6 against the map spread, 12-10 against the kill spread. Notably, 16-6 in favor of the kill total overs, average total of 23.5 kills. The regular season head-to-head between these two matchups was a 2-0 for Hanwha back in week 1, and the second one was a 2-1 Hanwha win in week 8. Firstly, looking at this matchup from a quantitative perspective, looking at performance metrics, game grades, and all of that, a handful of things stuck out to me like a sore thumb in this specific matchup. First of all, Guangdong are relatively poor closers. When you look at their sample size against just other good teams, they have a 57.1% closing rate with a lead of any size at 20 minutes against good teams. Anecdotally, this checks out. If you look at, you know, there's a handful of examples, especially recently, of them struggling to close games out against good teams. Second thing was Guangdong have a significant deficit at 20 minutes in more than 36% of their games against playoff caliber teams here. That's a very, very high percentage. That's concerning. Third, you look at trending game grades for the two. And by the way, I'm referencing a lot of this stuff. If you're a patron, you can see all of this in the tail of the tape and the win-loss analysis graphics on the Patreon. I'd encourage you to check that out. Otherwise, it's going to sound like I'm talking, you know, a little bit here. What this means essentially is I have the model does game grades primarily on economic statistics and objective control. It's not perfect. It's not a qualitative, you know, eyes on it game grade. I do that myself. But these are strictly the model's game grades, trending game grades, which is looking at the most, you know, recent 4 and 8 matches, putting more weight on those as well. The trending game grades for the most recent matches heavily, heavily favors Hanwha, who have performed excellently in the more recent matches against playoff teams. They actually have the overall, over the course of the last 8 games, they had the 3rd best game grade against good teams on average game grade. And Kwangdong had the 9th best, looking at the last 8 games against playoff teams. 4th, Kwangdong have a relatively poor agnostic goal differential per minute against good teams. It's not horrific, but it's not great. And for the record, most teams don't have a particularly good agnostic goal per minute or goal differential per minute against good teams, unless they are like world caliber elite, like world championship winning caliber elite teams. Hanwha are like not quite there, but they're like on the door. Like they're knocking on the door. They need to do a better job of creating differentials, but stylistically, it's not what this team does. I'll touch on that more in a minute. Kwangdong, however, are, you know, low 1600s, and that's getting into the there's a bit more of a cushion on the 1600s rule for this against good teams. You know, you can kind of dip into the high 1500s and be okay still, but you know, long story short, they have not performed well against good teams, you know, economically. And 5th, and perhaps the most interesting, maybe not the biggest deal, but the most interesting of these points, Kwangdong had a very, very stark contrast in whether or not they choose red or blue against good teams compared to the weaker teams. There's a few different ways you can interpret this. One is to say that, you know, maybe they're desperate and wanting counterpick because they don't feel confident in blind picking, which is what blue typically does. Like when you're on the blue side of the map, you're typically just blind picking a power pick that's generically good. Not always, but it could also be that they feel that they lack leverage in draft for certain, you know, certain picks or certain champions or whatever. I just found it very interesting because when you compare Kwangdong's regular season win rate in games with side choice, which was 47.83%, which is actually kind of amazing. They were below average to their side choice, to their win rate in games with side choice against good teams, which was 38.46. That's more than it's almost a 10% drop off. I just found that very interesting. You'd expect a decline just in general against good teams. So that's not all that surprising, but just that wide of a delta is a little bit surprising. And perhaps more interesting there is that they completely change the script. Like when they're playing against good teams, they tend to counterpick more often. They chose red in more than 61% of their games with side choice against good teams. Whereas during the regular season, they were doing so at a very, like a much, much lower rate. I don't know if there's something to this. It seems a little like there's maybe some signal there that they don't like playing blue side as much against good teams. They can't blind pick because they don't trust themselves to deal with counterpicks well. There's some degree of that makes sense. It could just be a CV Max coaching issue or coaching, you know, stylistic decision as well. This is a relatively young roster, something I'm going to touch on in just a second. Anyway, just purely from a data perspective, and obviously the, you know, the modeling here is that it's just looking at the data. The model does make this price, even with all of these things taken into consideration, the model makes this price way, way off. Made it about minus 400 fair, which is 80-20. It's being priced more like a 90-95%+ matchup here. You know, this is a team that made the playoffs in the LCK, and for as good as Hanwha are, you know, it's a big number. Like, this is being priced as if the books don't want you to bother, like, playing. They don't want you to bother playing Hanwha. They don't want Hanwha being thrown into parlays. They don't want any exposure to this. If you made me pick a side purely from a data perspective, I'd probably hold my nose and take Kwangdong to take a map at minus 107 plus two and a half maps. But let's take a look at this from a more qualitative perspective first. You know, Hanwha had the third seed, so they got to pick their opponent for this round, and they did choose Kwangdong. And it makes a whole lot of sense why they chose Kwangdong, because first of all, they're like a full tier down, I think, from the next set of teams, which is KT and D+. I do think Kwangdong are the one of these things is not like the other in the LCK playoffs. I do think they're the best of the rest. However, you know, it's pretty clear that they are a step down from the top five teams. I also think stylistically, this is just a perfect matchup for Hanwha Life. The way Hanwha Life want to play, and I've sound like a broken record at this point, but Hanwha Life are a pure counterpunching team. They are not a team that's typically going to engineer advantages on their own outside of individuals in lane. They are typically going to kind of apply a full court press kind of concept, or apply like a, you know, two-thirds, two lanes pressing kind of idea. Just accrue leads individually and then group and force the other team into they're not going to force the other team into a mistake. They're just going to kind of like hover around and wait for the other team to make a mistake. They are not a team that frequently starts the objectives, although they've been improving. They're getting better at that. They're a team that typically will let you start and let you dictate and then counterpunch and find the weak point in the armor. That's just how they play. It's why they tend to struggle against teams that can go underneath of them. Generally speaking, when you have these pure counterpunching teams, especially if they're very good, like Hanwha, I talk a lot of shit on Hanwha, but just to be clear here, Hanwha Life are one of the best iterations of that type of team that we've ever seen. They remind me a whole lot of like the original Griffin lineup, who played a very similar style where it was like, I used to call it like the boa constrictor style, where it was like you would just have like these elite laners lane the other team to death. And when the jungler just throws their Hail Mary to try to get out of the chokehold, you know, Tarzan was there to be like the boa constrictor's head and just like, you know, put the cap on it and close it out and then finish choking them out. Like, that's exactly how they played, right? The main way you beat Hanwha Life Esports, their primary weakness as a team, is if you can just play mistake-free League of Legends. Because they're a pure counterpunching team, they typically will just lose. Like, they tend to roll over and just die at that point. They, because they're not engineering a lot of their own advantages outside of just, like, strong laning. It's not 100% the case. They're getting a little bit better, but it's still a main concern with them, and it's why I think they're always going to have trouble with the top two teams in this league, but that's a different point. So the question here is, do we think Kwangdong are that team that can do that? I don't think they are. To me, Kwangdong have played very, very little mistake-free League of Legends this season. Usually with these middle-of-the-table teams, and we're going to talk about this a little more in the next matchup, you'll see flashes, and they'll have like some elite games, or maybe like a third of their games, they look like a legitimately good team, and the other two-thirds are like, huh? But Kwangdong have had like a lot more lowlights than highlights. They play kind of a very CV Max style team. Like, CV Max is the head coach. All of his teams tend to play like these kind of grinded out styles. But in the past, he's had much cleaner, much more talented teams than this one. I think Kwangdong are okay, but they're just very, very sloppy, and they are not a very clean, fundamentally sound macro team, which is a little bit surprising with him at the helm, but that's a different conversation for a different day. Now, normally, I like a dog that can keep things close, but against this Hanwha team, you just have to be able to close with a lead consistently, and Kwangdong just aren't the team to do that. You know, in a best of three, maybe you could piece together two clean games out of three, but when you up to a best of five, you're looking at asking the question of, can Kwangdong play three very clean games of League of Legends? And I don't think you're going to get that. Like, they need to play three pristine games, because that's essentially the level. That's what Hanwha demand of you. You have to play pristine League of Legends against Hanwha. Like, they are the ultimate gatekeeper team. They are extremely good at winning games that the other team makes a mistake in, even if they don't do the things themselves a lot of the time. So you have to play mistake-free League of Legends. So you have to ask yourself, can Kwangdong play mistake-free League of Legends? And then you have to ask yourself again, how often can they do that? Because that's the next question, right? A couple other points I want to mention on this, because frankly, I don't think they can. I think if you had to make a bet in this series, Like, if you made me pick a spread or a side bet in this match, I would play the Kwangdong plus 2.5 maps, which is just, can Kwangdong take a map? Yes. So I would play that because I do think this team is capable of playing, you know, piecing together one of these and getting them once. But, and I would not be laying the minus 2.5 or the sweep with Hanwha just because, you know, just stylistically, like, if the other team's just on that day, it's no longer in your control, which is a really, really bad feeling. So, anyway, that's how I would play sidewise on this. But a couple other notes I want to mention here just so that you guys have the information. I kind of forgot to mention this at the top, but the LCK is going to be playing on patch 14.6. The reason this matters is because Azir is going to be re-enabled on this match, or on this patch, and there are a couple champions that have been nerfed, most notably Smolder, and Kari Sena, actually. But we haven't been seeing too much of that. It's been more support farming Sena, which is still, it's still good, even with the nerfs. Smolder got hit not as massively as the initial nerfs that came out were originally going to hit Smolder, but Smolder is nerfed quite a bit still. So I still think you'll see it from time to time. I really don't think you're going to see it in playoffs. I really don't. Not in the LCK and the LPL, because, I mean, I think it'll be a bait if people do play it, because, you know, these teams are all good enough to snowball games on each other, so I just don't trust that teams are going to want to play that game. Anyway, the reason I mentioned the 14.6 is because I think Azir is a huge thing. I think this is a direct buff to some teams and kind of a indirect nerf to others. There are certain teams that rely more heavily on this champion than others. I think Kwangdong are actually one of those teams. If you look at Bulldog, Bulldog's been kind of an up-and-down player this season. More recently, he's been playing Huey a lot. He has 11 games on Huey. It's his most played by far this season. And he has not done well. He's won just two of those 11 games on Huey. He has not done well. It makes a whole lot of sense given Kwangdong's, you know, late game, you know, positioning and setup errors. But he also went 5-2 on Azir, and Azir's going to be available for this match. That should be a boon for Kwangdong, and it kind of maybe explains how they struggled a little bit on the, in the last couple weeks of the season. You know, Bulldog was really, really struggling on Huey for a lot of that. So I'll mention, like, this obviously helps Zekka as well. Zekka's an incredible Azir. It's his best control mage with margin. It's not even close. Really, it's the only control mage that he plays particularly well. It's not usually his wheelhouse, but it's the one that he does play pretty well. And, you know, it could help them having that as an option for him again as well. But I think the delta created by having access to this again for Bulldog is bigger than it being available again for Zekka. What I will mention is Zekka, some of his best champions are like Azir counterpicks, like Akali. So I'm not sure they're going to want to play that game, but just having the option, I think, is more of a boon to Kwangdong than most other teams. The exception being T1, who I think is the other one who's going to benefit from this a lot. I'm going to mention that probably next week, but, you know, just because I don't think Faker is like some Azir one trick. Clearly he can do everything, but a lot of what T1 have been doing this specific season has relied a lot on that specific champion having mid prio, and it's worked really, really well for them. And you saw that they started struggling when that got banned, and when they had to face the good teams, they kind of got wombo comboed back in week 8. So, you know, with Azir disabled, and then they had to play against Gen.G and Hanwha and D+, it was like, oof, that's kind of, you know, it made some sense why they looked a little bit sketchy. Anyway, that's a different point. I also want to mention, so I touched on the Smolder nerfs, but Kwangdong were a team that sort of baited themselves into the whole Smolder trend. They never made it work. They actually went 0-3 with Smolder. And two of the games they got completely steamrolled, and the other one they just screwed up with positioning later in the game, which is a problem that they have. Now, I'm not sure they're going to want to mess with that. I think they'll probably end up doing something like Zeri or Jinx instead. I really don't think they should be a good Jinx team either with how they set up for things. They're leaving themselves open to flanks all the time. But I just thought I'd point that out. You know, all told, I think this is just a brutal, brutal matchup for Kwangdong. Like, trust me, like, as someone that's like, I'm looking for opportunities to fade this Hanwha team. They're going to be severely overrated. They're severely overpriced. But I don't think Kwangdong are the team to do it. The one play I do like quite a bit in this contest is the kill total overs. I played maps 1, 2, and 3 over 24.5 kills at plus 108 on each map for one unit on each map. The reason for this is, you know, Kwangdong have gone over in 16 of their 26 games as underdogs, as I mentioned earlier. Now, They also haven't dropped off from their per minute and per game averages against good teams either, which is another, that's kind of a trend that I'm going to look for in kill total overs in this specific spot. I'll see that in the next match too. Now, I'll admit, in the five games that we saw between these two teams, the average kill total was 22.6 combined kills. Hamwha have tended to be an under team when they control the pace of the game, but I think you have the overall playoff macro trend being higher kill, more competitive games working in your favor. The Kwangdaeng have had a week to prep working in their favor. And I think there's a Kwangdaeng have just been a team that kind of throw themselves into their teams even when they're losing anyway. You know, they have a 0.948 combined kills per minute against playoff teams. Compared that to their regular season sample, which was 0.892. So I like kill total overs here. If you made me pick a side, I'd play plus 2.5 maps for Kwangdaeng, because I think there's a chance that, you know, just the way Hamwha win series, like the way Hamwha play, if the other team is having a good day, they can lose. And, I, you know, if you made me play a side in this, I'd play the Kwangdaeng side. Like, I would do plus 2.5 maps and then maybe like a tenth of a unit on the plus 1.5 and the money line. I think it's possible. I don't think it's winning three games against Hamwha, you have to just play so clean. So I really don't like Kwangdaeng on the money line. But if they come out and they're playing good League of Legends on Saturday, they could get a game or two. Again, like, you just need to play clean League of Legends against Hamwha. The problem is I don't trust Kwangdaeng to play three clean games of League of Legends. So no play on the side, but I played the over 24.5 kills at plus 108 on all three maps for one unit each. I also would I didn't end up playing this. I mentioned in the Patreon post that I was considering it, but if you can get a decent price on the over 4.5 dragons, I like those looks as well. I'm not going to double dip here. I'm going to stick with the kill total overs. But those, I think, again, over neutral overs make a lot of sense given the overall macro trends in the LCK playoffs and with these two teams specifically. The model projected that as a play even without the macro headwinds. So next up we have KT Rolster, minus 155 on the money line, minus 1.5 maps at plus 143. The KT sweep is at plus 368. Against D plus Kia, plus 128 on the money line. The plus 1.5 is at minus 174. The plus 2.5 maps is at minus 502. The D plus minus 1.5 is at plus 247. The D plus sweep is at plus 637. So, KT Rolster, for as volatile a team as they are, 9-2 is favorites. 6-5 against the map spread, but 9-2 outright is favorites. D plus, just 1-6 is underdogs, but 4-3 against the map spread is dogs. I want to point this out because we're going to touch on it a bit. Both these teams, KT Rolster, 18 out of 27 games as favorites have gone over, average total of 23.68 kills. D plus 11 out of 17 games as underdogs have gone over, but with a very low average total of 22.9 kills. This is a much more interesting matchup, a much more complex handicap. KT Rolster won the first meeting in a reverse sweep 2-1 win back in week one. Very long time ago, D plus looked like a much different team now, in a good way. D plus actually won the second meeting 2-1 back in week six. So these two teams haven't played against each other in about a month. Again, adjusting and filtering out the games against bad teams, these two teams were two of the three in the playoffs that struggled mightily against other good teams and actually graded significantly worse. Like, not just a little bit worse, but significantly worse. Not terrible, but it was noteworthy. And that's going to matter more in the next round, I think, when they're playing against the elite teams. But just thought I'd mention it with these two right off the bat here. Just records straight up, game record against other playoff teams. D plus were 5-19 in games against other playoff teams. KT Rolster were 10-15. From a purely, you know, just the model made this a coin flip. Pretty much, like, give or take a couple pennies. If I do the filtered model where I took out the games against the, you know, bad teams, it still made it very, very close to a coin flip. The former was actually a literal coin flip. It was like dead on 50-50, which you rarely see, but it was kind of cool. It was like a perfect, you know, even money fair. Few things that stand out to me in this matchup from a quantitative perspective, just like the performance metrics and data. D Plus have had an excellent early game against good teams despite their 5-19 record. Their objective control has been their downfall. They've been absolutely terrible. We saw this most in their most recent outing where they had leads in both games and just never secured a dragon. The second thing that stood out to me here was just some of the divergences I've noticed in certain parts of their game here. So like D Plus have just a single quality great like a graded quality win against a good team in their five wins against good teams. But more than 63% of their losses to good teams are graded off as quality losses, meaning that they're keeping games within striking distance or even having a lead and then just messing it up. KT, on the other hand, had just 26.7% of their games graded as quality losses. And, you know, they had a few quality wins, but KT also had a couple lucky wins as well. So KT Rolster against other good teams, much more feast or famine. D Plus are kind of keeping things within striking distance, but, you know, bungling and failing to close. Third is kind of tangentially related to this was divergences in games with leads and closing rates. D Plus Kia had a lead at 20 minutes of any size in just in half their games, which is actually pretty good against the good teams. Significant lead, it's in 16.7% of their games. But they won just 33% of the games that they had a lead in. So one third of the games they had a lead in. On the contrary, KT Rolster had a lead of any size at 20 minutes in just 32% of their games against good teams, and only 20% of their games great with a significant lead at 20. But they won 75% of the games that they won with a lead at 20. Or 70 games percent. Yeah, they won 75% of the games they won where they had a lead at 20 minutes against good teams. So much better closing rate, much less frequent rate of having the lead to begin with. Whereas D Plus, you know, had the lead and just failed to close. Anecdotally, this makes a lot of sense. This checks out, especially if you look at, you know, the past like three or four matches for these teams. It makes a whole lot of sense. Just from a performance metrics and results perspective here, like, the numbers are painting very, very specific pictures of both of these teams. You know, D Plus are a lot like, you know, 2023 Team Liquid. They get out to a lead and just struggle to close or do anything with it. KT Rolster are the ones getting run over early game and sometimes stabilize and win, kind of like RNG or NRG, if you want to make this a full LCS comparison, right? This presents kind of, you know, I think, what did I call it in the Patreon post? I called it, like, this is a classic conundrum. This is a classic scenario in League of Legends handicapping. It's a classic scenario in traditional sports handicapping, too. Fire and ice, fast or slow, tortoise in the hare, you know, unstoppable force meets immovable object, good offense versus good defense. We had a March Madness, we had a great matchup with that. We had Illinois against Iowa State. We had one of the best offenses in college basketball against one of the best defenses in college basketball. And it makes for an interesting handicap, especially when you're looking at like totals and other things like that, where, you know, who wins out? Who's going to dictate the pace? Does the offense dictate? Does the defense dictate? In this case, does the early game team dictate? Now, typically in League of Legends, the early game team dictates. Anybody that's been following me or listening to me or consuming my content for any extended amount of time knows that I tend to side with teams that have stronger early games because, you know, putting yourself in advantageous positions is more forward. It's better at, you know, forward predicting success. It's, you know, not 100% by any means, and there are certain teams that are going to frustrate the living shit out of you, just like Team Liquid did, which is why I referenced them. I generally think that you do need some kind of qualitative way to, you know, identify the exceptions. So in this case, do we think that there's a structural problem with D Plus versus, you know, maybe is there a structural problem? Is there a reason they struggle to close against good teams, or is this just something else? If you look at most of D Plus's games against the other playoff teams, I would say it was a little less than 2/3 of the games that they played against the other good teams. They were drafting an up-tempo composition. They were looking to end the game early. They didn't want to go to late game. They identified, you know, maybe on purpose or maybe that's just the way the draft shook out. Most of the time, they were trying to dictate the pace of the game. The games that they won, almost every, like, actually, I think it was all five of their games that they did win against good teams were games that they picked a tempo comp, actually snowballed, and actually closed. And we saw them able to do, they got one against T1 that way. Wasn't perfect, but it was a decisive, you know, strong snowball. A little bit of a hiccup there, but they did get the job done. So D Plus have shown that they can do that. It's just, it's a tough ask against the Elite Three specifically. I do think, for the record, that, like, again, I'm going to typically side with those teams. So I would lean to the D-plus side of things here. And it makes a whole lot of sense just, like, why they would approach the game this way, because they've kind of had some suspect decision-making. But the fact is, like, KT have too. They're not immune to criticism in their mid and late game decision-making either. This is a team that very frequently has just made really, really poor decisions. So, you know, in that sense of the word, or in that way, these two teams are similar. It's the root of most of their inconsistencies. I think KT is more specifically their in-game decision making, whereas D Plus, you know, it makes sense that they've gotten early leads and failed to close just based on the pre-game decisions that they've made in draft, right? So KT, I think, have, you know, maybe slightly worse in-game decision making, or more volatile in-game decision making, whereas D Plus, you know, their data is painting a picture mostly from draft against good teams, whereas KT, I think it's actually a bit more, you know, based on the in-game happenings. Might surprise you, but I'm actually not playing a side in this contest. I think a lot of people, if you, you know, just polled the entirety of everybody that consumes my content and said, who's Gelati going to be on for KT versus D-plus? There's no chance. Like, everybody would have told you he's going to be all over D-plus, right? I'm not playing D-plus here. And if you made me pick a side, I would probably just play D-plus money line. But I don't think there's a big enough edge on either side to play this. You have to keep in mind, KT are going to have side choice to open this, so that's a slight bump. Very, very small bump in a best of five, but it does matter. So I think ultimately, like, it's close enough to a market, like, it's close enough to fair that, like, there's not a big enough edge to play either side. I would lean D plus if you made me pick a side, though. Two other plays that I like in this, and they are props and derivatives. The first one is one that you can't get a lot of money down on, so I want to mention it first and just reference that, you know, grain of salt here. Everyone, I'm not unit shaming, but everyone's, you know, risk tolerance is different. So, you know, take with that what you will. It's tough to get down on first blood, but I'm playing D plus first blood at minus 118. I got half a unit down. It took a little bit of extra effort, but half a unit per map down. It was a couple different prices, but it was an average price of minus 118 for me. The reason for this, D plus 71.4% first blood rate for the season against KT's 47.7. If you look at it with the bad teams filtered out, it's an even bigger divergence. D plus actually have a 79.2% first blood rate against KT's 36% against just other playoff teams. I don't normally play a ton of first blood. It's an extremely volatile and tough thing to, like, most of the time there's just not really an edge in it because it's juiced up and, you know, there's just usually not that big of an edge, right? But every once in a while you get these teams that are just very, very good first blood teams. The one that comes to mind is TSM. I believe it was spring last year, spring 2023 TSM, where they were just like first blood gods. Or first blood gods, they were like over tower gods. Like, they were a very specific, like, prop oriented team that were like very easy to attack through those markets. I especially don't like playing first blood when you're laying money on it, but I think the edge is big enough here that it's worth a play. So I played a half stake for a net minus 118, half unit on all three of maps 1, 2, and 3. The second play I have here is the over 25 and a half kills at plus 109 for one unit each on maps 1, 2, and 3. Both these teams maintain their kill performance, combined kill rates, and combined kills per minute, combined kills per game. General pace of play is higher. It's or at least sustains against good teams. This is not just them running the score up on bad teams. They're generally pretty close. We also have the trends that I mentioned earlier working in our favor, and the macro headwinds of LCK playoffs tending to go longer and a little bit more bloodier also working in our favor. So also like those. So all told for the day, KT Wilson, D plus Kia, D plus first blood on maps 1, 2, and 3 for a half a unit each. Over 25 and a half kills, plus 109 for one unit each on maps 1, 2, and 3. Did I say half a unit on the first blood, full unit on the over 25 and a half kills? Hamo Life Kwangdong Freaks, maps 1, 2, and 3, over 24 and a half kills, plus 108 for one unit each. That's going to be it for me. I will be back later on Friday with the LEC and LCS previews. And LPL will probably be sometime on Saturday, if not much later, Friday night. Until then, best of luck and enjoy your weekend.